Hey everyone, welcome to Stutter Talk, episode 388 for March 10th, 2013. This will be the What Should I Do edition. I'd like to welcome to the show someone who should be well known to the listeners, Dr. Phil Schneider. How are you today, Phil?
Peter, it's always a joy to have time to talk with you and to participate in the Stutter Talk show. Thank you.
Same here. And I'm going to introduce you with some good voluntary stuttering. Phil Schneider is a board-recognized fluency specialist and associate professor emeritus of communication disorders at Queen's College, has been in private practice for more than 35 years, and is an advisor to Stutter Talk. Phil wrote with Ori Schneider the chapter titled Solutions in Therapy for People Who Stutter in the Stutter Talk book Stuttering, Inspiring Stories and Professional Wisdom, available at Amazon and elsewhere in paperback and as an ebook. To find out more about the work Phil and his colleagues do, go to schneiderspeech.com. Phil, are you ready to go?
I am ready.
So I always invite you on for tough topics, and today is no different. So recently I've gotten two very related phone calls. One was from an adult who stutters, and one was from a colleague, from a fellow speech language pathologist. And so the adult, he sent me an email, and he said that he just read my chapter in the Stutter Talk book, and he really wanted some advice from me about how to deal with his stuttering. Basically, what can I do? And the SLP in the school sent me an email and said, I'm working with a preschooler who stutters, and I have no idea what to do. Please tell me what to do. And I know that you've heard this question over and over again. Tell me what to do. So let's start with an adult who stutters. So you get an email, a phone call, or you're at a conference, an adult comes up to you and says, I stutter, what should I do? Help us break this down.
Okay, well, I think the first thing that strikes me in just hearing that you ask this question is the fact, a very beautiful fact, which is that most of us in the professional community of speech-language pathology devoted to people who stutter have a real deep generosity of spirit. We very much want to reach out to anyone who we think we have even a remote chance of being helpful to. And I think the same thing exists within the self-help community. And you, Peter, wear both hats. You are an active leader in the self-help movement with your Stutter Talk show and in other ways. And you're also a licensed professional. So there are certain things that we can do, and there are certain things that we cannot do. And I'd like to try to clarify some of those lines so we have some guidelines. Because as in the physician's oath, rule number one is do no harm. And sometimes giving advice when we don't know the person we're advising and we have no opportunity to follow up with them because we have no relationship can be actually hurtful. And sometimes we wouldn't even know the impact. So I'd like to say rule number one, here's something that we can always do as simply as human beings, as people involved in self-help for people who stutter, and as speech-language pathologists. You're always free to listen. As much time as we want to donate, it's okay to listen to people and to say that we care and to try to understand what they're telling us. You don't make a lot of mistakes when you're listening. So that's point number one. Point number two is you can listen in a way that suggests that you empathize, that you acknowledge that what you're hearing is a serious concern, and it warrants a thoughtful, informed kind of response, not something flippant that if someone's telling you that they have a lifelong or a long-lasting problem with stuttering and they're struggling with it and they think they need some help, they deserve real help. They deserve somebody to really get to know them, to get to know their story, to understand where they've been and where they can go, and to try to help guide them there. So sometimes doing too much can actually prevent them from getting to the right help. There's another thing that we can do besides listen and care. We can help people learn something about being good consumers. And in fact, we did a podcast on that, and you can find that on the Stutter Talk listing, how to be a good consumer. Many people don't know that they can go to a website, ASHA, American Speech and Hearing Association, where they can find a listing of recognized specialists, people who have established themselves as experts in caring for people who stutter. And that list is by area, and they can go in and look by state or by region. There's also a listing on the Stuttering Foundation of America website so that we can help people know to look for that. And even further, we can educate parents who call us about young children that they should shop carefully. They should call a few professionals and be sure that whoever they decide to meet with has a lot of experience with the age group that they're being concerned about. Stuttering is different than caring for a lot of other speech conditions, and the person they should meet should have experience in stuttering and experience with that age group. So we can help parents as well as adults do a good shopping job. And similarly, not everybody, I'm in a private practice situation. Not everybody's in a position economically to go to a private practice. I can help direct people to not-for-profit facilities in my region and even tell them how to negotiate the issues of finance to be able to get to quality care.
And let's just let the listeners know that if they go to stuttertalk.com at the very top where it says links, if you click that, there'll be a list of links and there'll be a link for the Stuttering Foundation referral list and for board recognized fluency specialists. And those links can help you hopefully find a qualified professional in your area.
I want to make a point to those of us who are professionals, as you are and as I am, that we bear a responsibility that's different than someone who's not a professional. So if someone asks their neighbor or their cousin or their aunt, you know, what should I do with my four-year-old who's been stuttering for a year? They can get all kinds of advice. And in fact, even from a pediatrician, because it's not really a medical question. But if they bring that question to a speech pathologist, we have a professional liability. We are supposed to know something about this if we respond. And our response carries a different kind of weight. It carries our license behind it and our training. So that too much advice that we give when we don't really know who we're talking about, it could be kind, but misguided. And in fact, the definition for that kind of advice is called malpractice. That's when you give advice and you haven't really done your due diligence. And people are entitled to us spending the time to really get to understand that person and to customize what we do with them. And that's why it requires more time to do a consult and to really find our way. And the other piece of that is that we need a chance to follow up. So if we've made a recommendation, we need to see how that plays out, because in our work, we have to keep customizing what we do and then readjusting it as things move forward. The analogy that strikes me is if you're a child and you are a parent, as I am, gets up in severe pain during the night, and you ask your friend what to do, and your friend says, just give them an Alka-Seltzer, and they'd probably be okay in the morning. Your friend is probably 90% right. If you call your pediatrician says, I'll meet you at the emergency room. And they may wind up seeing and examining your child and saying, you know, I think Alka-Seltzer will do the job. Or they may say your child was about to have a burst appendix. And they can't afford to miss that. And you would not want them to miss that. So I think that we're a generous of spirit, which comes out of kindness. It's a beautiful thing. We're always willing to give advice, free advice. But I think we have to be careful to realize that the skill that we have in listening and seeking to understand and guiding people is really a very high-level professional skill, and it has the consumer's best interest at heart.
Let's remind everyone, this is Stutter Talk. I am Peter Reitzis here with Dr. Philip Schneider. Phil has put out probably my favorite stuttering video of all time, Transcending Stuttering, The Inside Story. It's just a phenomenal piece of work. I've probably seen it 20 plus times. So Phil, I know you get this all the time, as I do. You get an email or a phone call from somebody, and they say to you, I hear you're the person who really knows a lot about stuttering. I'm an adult who stutters. Can you tell me what to do? And what I think complicates it just a little bit is oftentimes we know a friend of the person. So the person can say to us, I'm good friends with so-and-so. You help that person a lot. They told me I should call you. What should I do? Can you help us piece through that?
I think the fact that you're raising the question, and it's a common question in our profession, says something very nice about people who become speech pathologists. I think by and large, we're people who are characterized by having a real generosity of spirit and a willingness to give above and beyond what we're paid to do and the work that we consider as part of our have-to-do work. But I think we need to be careful, because sometimes in our generosity, we may wind up giving advice without having taken careful time to really get to know the story in depth, to meet with a person, to see them, to not only hear them, but to see them, to hear their story, to watch how they do what they're doing that they say is their intervention, and to begin a relationship where you can support them and guide them to see how they respond to the suggestions you make, and to be engaged in a therapeutic relationship. These calls are opportunities to guide people to good quality care. So I think number one, one of the first rules is there's no harm in listening to a person. But set a boundary, because some people are going to call, and as long as you're willing to stay on the phone, they're willing to talk to you, and they'll go on and on. So you need to know how much time am I willing to give, and how much is this going to really serve the long-term interest of the other person. And in that time, you can suggest that you care and you can empathize. No harm with that. The next thing you can do is we can help them find good care. Give them some ways where can, and I know on the Stutter Talk website, there is a link to two listings of speech pathologists. We need to make people aware that that's there. How to be a good consumer, how to listen and when they call different professionals, to hear who would they feel most comfortable working with. Has that person had a lot of experience with the age group? So I think we need to segue the conversation from how am I going to help you in 10 minutes on the phone or 15 minutes or 20 minutes to how am I going to help you find a partner to really help you bring about change in your life in a way that's meaningful and long-lasting. If the call is from a parent, even if the parent is a colleague of ours and even an expert in stuttering, the same thing. Giving them quick advice on the phone may not be the most helpful thing to them and to their child in the long haul. A couple of questions for parents of very young children that could be helpful on the phone is, how old is the child who's stuttering? And about how long has that been going on? And if a person tells me on the phone that they have a child's been stuttering for a week or two or three, I could suggest to them that it is often not harmful to wait a little bit longer, but a little bit longer may not be months and months, but it may be a few more weeks. And if they feel the need, they should find a real expert, not only in stuttering, but in stuttering in a preschool child, because there are special treatments for that age group. So again, generosity of spirit is a wonderful thing about our profession. Good listening, caring, empathizing, always a nice thing to do and always helpful and can be done in a few minutes. And then seeing our job as guiding people to getting the care that they deserve. A thoughtful, you know, it takes time to do that, sorting out the pieces and developing a partnership. Those are a couple of my thoughts.
So Phil, when I was going through some really tough times and great times with stuttering, I was working with you. You were my speech therapist. You really helped me a lot, immeasurably. And at the same time, you helped get me involved in self-help. And one of the things I really adored about the Manhattan Stuttering Support Group was that when we spoke, one of the big rules was that people who stutter were not allowed to comment on what other people who stutter say. And I know other self-help groups don't have that rule, so people are giving a lot of advice and commenting. And I really appreciated being able to share something about my stuttering and my speech therapy and my life and not having anybody judge it or tell me it was right or wrong. What do you think of that?
Oh, that sounds so wonderful. One of the incredibly powerful things that can happen in the self-help gathering of people who are dealing with stuttering is there is the opportunity to tell your story, to share how you feel, what you think, and how you're living with this, and know that the other people in the room really can hear you. They can really get, wow, I hear what you're saying, we care, without manipulating what you're saying or trying to fix what you're saying. So I think that ground rule that we don't question, we don't give advice, We're here to listen to each other. I think that's a very therapeutic kind of opportunity. And I do encourage that for people.
Man, I remember many years ago, before I was a speech language pathologist, it was my turn to be in charge of the activity for the group. So people always came in with different activities, such as role-playing an interview or pretending to buy food at a restaurant while using eye contact. And my activity was to use voluntary stuttering during a conversation. And I remember a lot of people in the group getting really, really mad at me. And it's, I don't regret the experience, but I learned pretty quickly that it was probably a bad idea to in any way tell or suggest to other people what they should be doing about their stuttering.
That's a great insight, because what's right for one person at one moment in time is not right for someone else. And in fact, what's right for one person at one moment in time is not right for the same person at another moment in time. So I think that what we as professionals need to remember, and what people in the self-help community need to remember, is this is not such a simple phenomena. Stuttering itself is not simple, and living with stuttering is not simple, and changing how we live with stuttering is not simple. It's complex, and it's sensitive. And again, back to the same rule, listening, you can do no harm listening. And in fact, it's very healing for people to know that people listen and care. We hear you. Whether we really understand and whether we tell you what to do about it, that's not as powerful as we are really being heard. And I think for people who have this stuttering challenge, you grow up feeling like people are not going to hear you. They're not going to want to listen. They're not going to be patient enough. So the healing takes place on many levels here, that you just find out, wow, it feels good to be able to, in your own time, say what's real for you and know that people in the room are going to listen to your message, no matter how long it takes, and validate it. Say, yeah, I hear you. That is hard. That is very healing.
This is Stutter Talk. Peter writes us with Dr. Phil Schneider, a Stutter Talk advisor. So, Phil, let me throw this out to you. There are a lot of different workshops that one can find at stuttering self-help groups. For example, one that's very common and loved are these open mics, where there's a room full of people who stutter and professionals and parents, and you get your turn with the microphone, and you can say anything you want in front of a large group. That's one of the workshops. There's another workshop where a person can, if they choose to, go to the workshop and practice using voluntary stuttering and then go out in public with a group and use voluntary stuttering. Do you have any concerns about workshops like those?
Interesting question. I think that when you go to a meeting, it gets a little tricky because we have the crossing over now, which is a beautiful thing, of self-help now being integrated with people who are professionals. So I myself very much value the time that I spend at self-help gatherings. And it's tricky because you socialize with people and you have informal interactions. And it's a bit tricky. People are adults who choose which seminars to go to are free to move in and out of and taste many different approaches to things. They're free to ask other people about their experiences as consumers. They're free to sit down and discuss things with professionals. So I think overall, the opportunity that exists these days to go to gatherings, which are very rich in their programming, where you have many, many different professionals and consumers, people who stutter, people who don't stutter, people who are interested from different perspectives to share, to listen, to talk. And will some people go to one thing and have a bad experience because it was not the right thing for them? And perhaps whoever was leading that gathering was not sensitive to that person's needs. Yeah, there's always some degree of risk. But I think the benefit of being able to hear so many angles on this issue and so many perspectives far outweighs the risk. I think as parents who bring youngsters these things, they should watch over what's going on so things are right. So, for example, a child may enter into a group where the group leader is suggesting everybody should go out and stutter on purpose. And And some child in that group may be terrified of that and may be pushed. And because and the group pressure may be almost like reverse bullying, you know, insisting that they be comfortable being overt with something that they are very frightened about. So there's some of that concern. I think by and large, the two major national self-help groups right now, the National Stuttering Association and the Friends Organization, are pretty good. But the standard is not that of a professional. So I think that the consumer knows that they have to take responsibility for some of the choices they make.
Yeah, Friends was just here about a week ago in North Carolina. Patricia Zabrowski was the keynote, and Lee Caggiano and others were here. And I just felt like my body, my soul was cleansed. I just felt so great after a day of being with Friends. I just need it every now and then. It's like a shot in the arm.
The self-help movement is a tremendous, tremendous addition to the health and well-being of people who stutter. And again, the benefits are the potential benefits are very, very powerful. And adults can make their own choices about who they speak with and which advice they take or don't take. But it's a great opportunity to explore this area in a very supportive environment.
So if a self-help group came to you and they said, you know, Phil, we need some people to help us make sure that we're doing everything as well as we can, would you give them any advice regarding the statements you just made about like a child who might feel uncomfortable or accidentally bullied to try something that's scary? Like, would you be able to give any general advice on structuring workshops?
I think that the same thing I would, same advice I would give to professionals, which is if you're conducting a workshop for children, we need to remind ourselves that everybody in that room is an individual with different sensitivities, different feelings, different history, different issues with their stuttering, different issues with themselves as a person and as a person who stutters. And one size does not fit all. So we may be focused on encouraging people to try a certain approach, but in a self-help workshop, we're not their ongoing therapist. So there are exercises which involve listening and sharing are always fine, so long as we know that we have to set it up in a way that people feel free to not participate as well as to participate. So with an open mic activity, people in that room feel free to walk up to the mic and speak, regardless of how challenging that is. And people in that room also need to feel free not to do that. So if we're conducting a group for people and we create a certain social pressure, come on, everybody's doing it, let's go. That can be very disturbing for a person who's not ready for that activity or for whom that activity is not a good fit. And particularly as we address children and teens, where social pressure can be so powerful, I think that we need to counsel whoever leads a workshop and remind everybody in whatever guidelines we give to people who lead workshops as amateurs, as well-meaning parts of the consumer movement, to be sensitive to the fact that everybody in that room is in a different place. You don't know what's going to strike a chord of pain and of suffering. And the same thing when we address parents. I often lead parent workshops or adult workshops. There are parents in that room who are in great pain. And to the extent that we can, we have to remain aware of that and be sensitive, go gently. If someone doesn't want to share, that's fine. We have to make sure other people in the room don't, that we have to set some ground rules that everybody knows to listen and not to be overly responsive or reactive, but to listen and to care.
I love that advice. And just that simple idea or statement that you can participate if you want to and you don't have to. I just think that's so important. When I was attending regularly the Manhattan Stuttering Support Group meetings, I loved some of the rules they had. I'm not sure who came up with the rules. It was Jeff Shames or Liz Capstein, but just some great rules. And one of, so they shared this rule where you didn't have, or this guideline that you didn't have to participate, that nobody would ask you to speak. But they did this thing that I'll never forget, where if everybody who had wanted to speak had spoken, they would ask for a moment of silence. And they would basically let anybody who had not chosen to speak, they would just give them a little time to decide if they wanted to speak or not before moving on. And I just always appreciated that, because it was a very gentle way of saying, before anybody else speaks twice, this is your chance to speak. And I just have learned so much from the self-help movement.
I think that's a beautiful example. And what you describe is honoring the listening, that silence is okay. And sometimes out of the silence, a person needs more time to formulate or to produce what is on their mind. And it's also okay to listen quietly to each other. So I think anything that really puts it out there to honor listening is a good way to help each other. Sometimes our best help is just by someone else promising to listen and not to speak.
Dr. Phil Schneider, I want to thank you so much for your generous time today. And just one last topic. Would it be all right with you if we role play me being a speech therapist calling you for advice?
So long as I can role play myself being myself.
Perfect. So here goes. Ring.
Hi, Phil Schneider here.
Hi, I'm about 20 minutes down the road from you, and I've heard from everybody that you are the stuttering guy. So here's the deal. I am working now with a preschooler who stutters. I have no idea what to do. Could you please tell me what to do?
Wow. First of all, I want to compliment you that you care enough about this child and this child's family to take the time to find somebody to call and call. My own experience with working with preschoolers is that there are some approaches which are highly effective, and they take some time to learn about. I myself have gone to numerous seminars to learn about those things, and I think the best thing you could do for this family is to help them find somebody who is an expert in dealing with preschoolers who stutter. And this is the right time for them to do it, and the right person, they really have a chance to help eradicate this condition.
Well, thanks, Dr. Schneider, but here's the thing. As I work in the schools, and my school assigned me this child because they're in my district, and they're not going to hire anybody else, and every week I have to go to their house and give this child speech therapy, and I haven't taken a stuttering class in 20 years, and I just don't know what to do. Can you just tell me a few things to do?
Wow. You have a real dilemma. You have an ethical, professional ethical dilemma. And it's kind of similar to if you were the only doctor in the hospital and you happened to be, you know, a neurologist, but they said somebody was coming in who needed cardiac surgery. And you're the only MD and your license says you're a physician. So you're it because we don't want to send this patient to a different hospital and lose the income. Do you do the surgery?
I don't know.
Well, I think you wouldn't know where to begin. And you would realize right away the best thing you can do to help this person save their life is to get them to somebody who knows what to do. So you have a dilemma. Your job contract says whatever they tell you, you should do. You have a professional ethical code which says that you cannot do what you don't know what to do. You are not ethically allowed to pretend that you know what you're doing when you know that you don't. And you have to ask yourself what you would do if it were your child, not someone else's child. Would you find help for that child? And so I think you need to figure out how you're going to do that. I myself have gone on my own time, out of my own pocket, and taken a lot of training to do this kind of work. Those trainings are available. In the meantime, you know, you may need to counsel the family that there are specialized treatments for young children who stutter, and that, you know, you plan to get that care, that training soon, but they may need help now. You may then have to confront your supervisor and say that you have an ethical dilemma, that you understand the school district doesn't have anyone who knows how to treat this, and you do not know how to treat this. And even though they'd like you to take care of it, it's their administrative problem, it's their bureaucratic problem. But they're also bound by law. They're not bound just to provide service. They're bound to provide the right service, the best service. And this family would have a good lawsuit against the school if they do not do that.
Wow. Very sobering. advice, and we're definitely not going to
you may not
solve
want to go.
This issue today on the podcast, but you really put a lot on the table to think about.
We need to take our own work seriously. And that's why when I make reference to physicians, it kind of drives the point home, because particularly in the area of stuttering, I don't know of a child whose life has been really perturbed seriously by having a lisp. And so if the speech therapist is not particularly adept at it and they're trying to help a child with it, you know, it's kind of neutral. It's either helpful or not helpful. But I haven't met a lot of people whose lives have been really, really impaired by a lisp. And the language work that we'd spend so much energy in the schools working on, I mean, as kids grow and develop, their language tends to either, it gets better. It's the rate of improvement that varies, but it doesn't go backwards. Stuttering can go south or north. With the right help, we can really prevent a person from suffering in their lives. With the wrong help, we can increase the likelihood that they will go down the wrong road. We can send the wrong messages to the child and the wrong messages to the parent. And as you and I know very well, stuttering is a very sensitive issue. It has a body, that is the physical interruptions, and it has a soul, which is how it makes a person feel to walk around not knowing when they're going to get mugged when they try to say their name. So if we are professionals, and we are, and we should be, we need to take what we do seriously. And if something's presented to us that we don't know how to handle, we have to spend the time to learn and to train to do it right, or find people and get that person to the right people. We are personally and professionally and legally obligated to do that.
Wow. So much you said to explore there. And this is something you've said in your book chapter as well. And I give you a lot of credit for saying it so clearly, which is that if we don't do this job well with children who stutter, we risk doing harm. And I think that's a point that we don't hear enough, is that we do risk doing harm if we don't do the job well.
We've never had a research article published that I've seen or a presentation given on the harm that we do as a profession. And unfortunately, even though, as I started out, that we are a profession of people who by definition have a very generous spirit, I think often we do a disservice to people inadvertently. And the conversation today, I'm really reaching out to all of my colleagues, to myself. I'm talking to myself and letting all of you listen. We need to be careful that people who have this challenge of stuttering, and particularly when we're talking about very young children, we have an obligation to make sure they get the best care possible. And we have a lot of talk professionally about standards of care and so forth, and trying to do things in the best possible way. We can't then turn around and turn our back and just say, well, they're over in the school, so the school person or whoever it is has to do it just because they have that job. That doesn't work for me. And by the way, the school person might be the most highly qualified person in the world, in which case that's wonderful. We have to help fight for the best possible care for all people who stutter, and for particularly young children who stutter.
Okay, Phil, so here's a tough one. Being in the schools for 12-plus years, we're all called upon to help one another. So we all have our specialties or special areas of interest, and I am the stuttering guy in North Carolina. So people contact me all the time, my colleagues. So that's a realism of my job. How do you think I should approach it when my colleagues contact me and say, I have a preschooler, I have a school-aged child who stutters, and I don't know what to do. Can you help me?
I think the first thing to do is we, as the people who have spent a lot of time on this, need to recognize that the skill sets that we've developed have grown over a long period of time for you through your own life struggle and challenges and what that's taught you, as well as the work you do in the self-help community, as well as the work that you do professionally. And we need to create structures to help educate other professionals out there who are willing to commit to that. I don't think it can happen in a half hour. I don't want to become professionally attached to someone who says to me they don't know what they're doing, and I'm going to give them a half-hour conversation. Then they're going to say that they're being counseled by Phil. But I might reach out to them and say, you know, if you want to come and learn, but it's going to be a much more significant amount of time. First of all, we have a right to be compensated for our time. your school system may decide you are the expert and you have to come up. You may then come up with a model for the state where you become the state expert. I know that we have a colleague who's done that in another state where she is the school system expert, and she goes around, she gets to know those kids. She works with the speech therapists who help the kids, and she is an ongoing consultant following up and supervising that work. It's a beautiful model. I'd like to see that model expanded in school systems where they bring in an expert who helps train and guide in a continuous way the work of others. That would be a professionally responsible way to go.
Dr. Fulschneider, I want to thank you so much for everything you do in the stuttering world. I want to encourage all the listeners to go check out your films, Transcending Stuttering, The Inside Story, and Going with the Flow, A Guide to Transcending Stuttering. And to view these films and to learn more about Dr. Schneider, go to schneiderspeech.com. Thank you so much, Phil.
Thank you, Peter, very much.